week we had media news from Brazil, Canada, Argentina, Russia, China, and Nigeria.
From Brazil.
How is Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro opposing LGBT programming?
From Canada.
What can the Canadian government do about cyberbullying? Is it a crime?
From Argentina.
Can fact-checkers Chicago and Reverso keep fake news from influencing voters?
From Russia.
Are journalists living in fear of violence for doing their jobs?
From China.
Are social media giants canceling accounts linked to Chinese disinformation campaigns? Is this censorship or necessary regulation?
From Nigeria.
How are Afropop artists using new media platforms to become stars? How are YouTube videos the motor of the star-making machine in African music? What is that Empower initiative, and who is Mr. Easy?
All this and more coming up on OWWR, All Space Brilliant Web Radio, streaming live from the stadium in Minnesota, Colorado, coming to you from Space Radio.
Mohamed Fergali has media news from Brazil. The conservative president of Brazil, Jair Bolsonaro, has been accused of being an authoritarian. Now he is being accused of being a homophobe as well. Just how much influence does his national government have over Brazilian media? What is the current television market like in the country of Brazil?
Brazil is one of the world's fastest growing television media production and television consumption. According to the BBC Country Profiles, television dominates South America's biggest media market. There are hundreds of TV networks and thousands of radio stations. Telenovelas are the trend. Television series, dramas, or soap operas created from Latin American countries are highly popular in Brazil and the world, attracting huge nationwide audiences. Recently, Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro, who is the country's 36th president, was sworn into office in January of 2019 during the 2022 presidential election. He has come under fire for case on state television funding grants for an anti-LGBT theme series, ACME, which is the national funding agency that Brazil is limited to give out state grants, $17 million to new production grants and actions.
How much money is frozen due to this decision?
According to an article by Reuters, this decision suspends about 70 million from the total government grant, or a fraction that we see from the LGBTQ plus projects. This suspension is seen to last for up to 365 days, but the state can be ordering how the funding is going to be used in the future. The since canceled TV series, titled by Fontaine, follows the story of a gay black man living in the southern Brazil. According to Screen Daily, President Bolsonaro, on Facebook Live, said in the end of August, criticized television and film projects of sexual diversity content, stating that he did not understand the need to make a production to show the reality of black homosexuals in Brazil that they apply for that sort of. The five-episode series was intended to raise awareness for the lives of LGBT citizens living in Brazil.
Does President Bolsonaro have a history with controversy against the LGBTQ community in Brazil?
Well, this is not the first time President Bolsonaro has shown disdain for the LGBTQ population of Brazil. According to a CNBC article published by the LGBTQ community, the president has had a history of outrage against women, race, and LGBTQ rights. Just hours after his inauguration, Bolsonaro removed LGBTQ rights for giving up to industry considerations and removed children from homosexuality and textbooks. He's also had multiple quotes from anti-LGBT universities passed as a politician, including him saying that he allowed his son to dead and homosexual. President Bolsonaro was set to receive an award from the Brazilian Music and Chamber of Commerce as a world leader, but has since came to these challenges all the recent controversy. After several of the corporate sponsors of the event have backed out and not only repaid the same criticism. So, giving these on the Mansour Gallery, back to you, Amy.
Thanks, Mohamed. Let's speak with the money ins about Canada and the internet. Cyberbullying is a global issue, and Canada is confronting the problem. What can governments do to regulate online content and minimize the amount of abusive trolling that goes on? Should online cyberbullying be treated as a crime to be addressed by the criminal code, police, and the criminal justice system? Or is it a form of media content that should be treated as speech and regulated by telecommunications policies? Should it be stopped by the corporate social media platforms? Are there any dangers posed by government or corporate efforts to control online content? What is the role of the corporate platforms in limiting cyberbullying? Amani, tell us something about what you drew to this topic. What was your first Canadian news source?
Because social media is such
from like a major source, it is easier. It's an easier way to send content and communicate with people around the world. It allows you to be creative and share new information or ideas. It also means it, but it also means it's easier for people to attack, harass, and even stalk others. So we have a handful of social media sites worldwide, like Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, etc. Cyberbullying happens mostly in youth, and that happens mostly in Instagram, the social network of Instagram. What Canada is trying to do with their, in order to stop cyberbullying, is they're trying to enforce different programs that can help stop cyberbullying, which includes phone monitors and computers that work. Detects like foul language. It gives people warning that like the post that they're writing or it will fall under cyberbullying. And they're also trying to create an app which will allow other students and employees to report any issues of cyberbullying that may happen in like the school or workplaces. This is seen as a crime because this can lead to people committing suicides and creating harm to themselves and other people. Canada is also trying to create a law in 2013, which prevents cyberbullying, so it is a crime in their eyes. This is according to that people are putting themselves in danger as well as other people creating harm. It's messing with their mentalities and all that, so it definitely is something that needs to be stopped. How to say that we can help out by, if you see it, say something. Don't be afraid to speak up. Let someone know if you're weak. That way, it can be prevented.
So, what can we do to help stop cyberbullying?
Report it. That's really the major thing that you can do, is you just have to report if you're being cyberbullied. If you see anybody else being bullied online, report it. Say something. This is what we need. Back to you.
Thanks, Imani. Argentina is a democracy that has elections and a fake news problem. Does fake news pose a threat to the political system of Argentina? What can be done? Will fact-checking be enough?
Social media has only made it worse due to how fast news can spread. People can easily make up something fake about somebody, and if it's believable, people will believe it. And the problem is, both sides of the political spectrum are doing it, unlike other countries, which is one side spreading fake news. And it's been hard for so many people to figure out what's right and what's wrong. The president himself, Mauricio Macri, was even involved in a scandal before the primaries in August, where troll bots from Twitter were created using the hashtag YoVotaMM with initials. People found out that the companies who made those bots were in direct relation with the president. And people found out he lost his support and even lost the primaries.
How is Argentina doing to stop the spread of fake news?
The government has decided to create a commission called Comisión de Verificación de Noticias Falsas, or Commission for Verification of Fake News. They hope to decrease the spread of fake news, and with this commission, they've received so many support by many political parties who have also signed up to the commission. They've even gained support outside the country. For example, France, they've dealt with fake news of their own in their own election back in 2017, and in response, they decided to create a cross-checking initiative. And after seeing what's been happening in Argentina, they've decided to team up with Chiquiada, to create a fact-checking project called Reversal, inspired by their own fact-checking initiative.
What has projects like Reversal done in stopping fake news?
Chicago is one of the major fact-checking sites. They were created back in 2010. They've been using their own tool called Checkabot. They check in with news outlets and they check every speech made by the president to see whatever fact they put out is true. And they've aligned themselves with the major news outlets in Argentina, and they're training journalists to spot and detect fake news, which then they created the fact-checking project Reversal, who's also received support by WhatsApp, Facebook, and Google to limit the fake news on their own site. I'm Oscar Martinez from Global Media News. Back to you, John.
Thanks, Oscar. Thanks, Captain Nicholas, media from Iran. Alihi is covering Russian media news. This week, she is reporting on the difficult lives of Russian journalists who seem to be working in a climate of censorship, intimidation, and even fear of physical violence. How dangerous is it to work as a journalist in Putin's Russia? Olivia, Putin's authoritarian government has a lot of influence over the Russian media. Censorship and self-censorship are a part of working in Russian media, which is dominated by the state. Is it sometimes dangerous to be a journalist in Russia? Are there deafening attacks on journalists?
In Russia, being a journalist can become a life or death situation. There has been a loss of lives due to journalists putting out fake news in Putin's eyes. Associated Press, also known as AP News, a U.S.-based nonprofit news agency, clearly states this by saying, dozens of Russian journalists have been killed or brutally beaten in recent years in clear retribution for their work. In addition to this, many journalists have lost entry privileges because Putin did not like what was being said about him and how his government is run. The Guardian, a British daily newspaper, states this by saying, since 2000, Russians have been deported or have been refused entry to 40 journals.
Why did you pick this topic, and what is your view on this issue?
I picked this topic because I know of the censorship in Russia and how hard it is for journalists to get their news out because Putin is afraid of fake news being spread. He is afraid of what his people will see from the outside, because they're not looking at the outside factors. And this is very important to me because, you know, everyone deserves to have freedom of press, and I feel as if Russia is not getting that. For Global Media News, I'm Olivia Ferrara. Back to you, John.
Thanks, Olivia. Big tech social media corporations like Facebook and Twitter are taking down accounts that violate their policies. What do these accounts do wrong? Do they have something in common?
My co-host, John Greenberg, is ready with a report about a recent wave of social media takedowns. Hundreds of social media accounts that have been closed recently. Some of these accounts seem to be linked to China. Why are these accounts being deactivated? What kind of threat do they pose? Why is China creating these accounts? Why are American and Western social media firms taking them down? Is this about propaganda and disinformation? Is this about China's soft power campaign to influence world opinion? John, what kind of accounts are we talking about, and how did the social media giants justify closing so many accounts?
For this report, I focused on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. It's an underlying collaboration, if you ask me. I'll go into more detail on what exactly the Chinese government did on social media in just a few minutes.
What exactly did the closed accounts say to be removed from these social media platforms?
The general theme of their messages is overall disgust and disapproval of the Hong Kong protests. The New York Times reports that some of these messages refer to protesters as terrorists or the ever so known cockroaches. The accounts posted in Boston Post and news networks posted these highly biased things. Hong Kong had really long to some recent protests reaching hundreds of thousands of participants, many bad news from mainland China. Of course, these accounts would want the protests to end without achieving the change they desired.
How did Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube find all these accounts promoting disinformation?
as stands and friends, they work together, single by. Fox reports that Twitter was first brought to the attention of hostile messages made against the Hong Kong protests. Twitter very soon made Facebook aware of the situation, finding similar messages on their platform. Finally, YouTube posted a new video counselor later on. All three companies use the same wording to explain their decision to remove these accounts, being coordinated and with their dick behavior. Fast China Media Post reported. The wording of the statement was found to be incredibly interesting in how carefully it was constructed. Even if it is undeniable that the Chinese government had bad intentions, one false move would lead to major backlash from users around the world. Keep in mind, the breakdown was 936 Twitter accounts, 210 YouTube channels, and a handful of Facebook pages, groups, and accounts all shut down. All these sources found. Especially with the technology allowing individuals to own thousands of fake accounts, the number isn't too devastating to the platforms. The most notable of the reach these accounts make can be found on Facebook. Only closed-down groups had 15,000 members, and another page had 2,000 followers. The Chinese government had to be noticeable to be caught, not being too difficult with these members.
How did they know these messages were coming from close to the Chinese government?
Bottom line, these messages were coming from IP addresses tracing back to China, in their own reports. With the exception of LinkedIn, all social media platforms that we use are banned in mainland China. No internet users in China are getting past the Great Firewall safely without getting okay from the Chinese government, as Fox puts it. An IP monitoring device would be especially dangerous in this setting.
If these messages were not directed at mainland China, who did they want to see them?
Everyone except mainland China, basically. Particularly the remaining English-speaking world were the target. The New York Times reported that many of these messages sent on Facebook and Twitter were written in English, rather than Mandarin, most likely so that English-speaking Hong Kong residents would see it. Writing these messages in English could have been the downfall of these 1,000+ accounts, having more of the outside world able to understand what is being said and accordingly following up on it. For Global Media News, I'm John Greenberg. Back to you, Olivia.
Thanks, John. Do you listen to Afropop? Let's talk Nigerian media and the music industry with Travis Ferguson. Travis is reporting on Afropop artists who are using new media tools and social media to create, distribute, and promote their music. YouTube and its music videos are a very important channel for music distribution in Africa. How important are streaming music videos and social media platforms to the success of the next generation of Afropop stars? Travis, tell us a bit about Afropop to get us started. What kind of music is Afropop, and who are some of its biggest stars?
So, Afropop is a very popular genre. Some popular Afropop artists are Davido, Tito Savage, Burna Boy.
What got you into Afrobeat?
So, pretty much what got me into Afrobeat was in my neighborhood. A bit about Afrobeat. So, I would hear a lot going around the neighborhood, and also my fraternity, Epic Culture, and maybe we all show it's Afrobeat.
Do you think Empower will sustain and be successful as an initiative?
Yeah, I do. So, before I get to that, let me just pretty much briefly explain what Empower is. It's an initiative that Mr. Bill, initiative that he came up with. Pretty much, so there's a lot of up and coming artists in Nigeria, so this is pretty much to help them out. So he's given a platform to 10 Nigerian artists, or African artists in general. He's Nigerian. So it's to give them a platform. Pretty much what they have to do is either have their own song, or make a cover of the song, and help them out. And so he's going to, well, he already picked 10 winners, and then he featured them on the Empower page. So that helps him gain some memory. But the good thing about that, too, is it's public. This definitely helped them out, giving them a platform that they never had. People can require any help with them. Yeah, I think we'll see that. Just Mr. Easy, like I said, he did more. He's a Nigerian artist that came up on his own. He was on Power, but he was so he's using his platform now to help. Bob is telling him to talk about Nigerian artists. In terms of other Nigerian artist, like I said, Tim Ngabi, but they never use a phone. Just easily, but they use it on their own.
Thank you, Travis. That's all for this week. Thank you to our producer and engineer, Kyle Brodsky, and thanks to John Greenberg for hosting with me this week.
Today, we heard the points from Monica Crespo, Mohamed Farkani, Travis Ferguson, Olivia Salama, Amani Hintz, and Oscar Martinez.
Global Media News is brought to you by OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio, and the Media and Communications Department here at the State University of New York, College at Old Westbury.
For more media news and resources, check out our latest posts at globalmedianews.org, where you can listen to all of our webcasts and even subscribe to our podcast feed.
Follow us on Twitter at OWWRGMN. Use our Twitter feed to keep up with the latest news for aspiring journalists and media professionals.
Westbury. 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 Westb